Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah. Oh. It's the Empowerment Network. 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man Marvin Rohn coming to you once again live on the EA Community Conversations. This time is with Brother Booker. And this show is about As One Man Season. Hang on. Let's ride. No better love. Better love. There is no better love than for self and kind. That's right, no better love. Welcome to the NAA Community Conversation with Brother Booker and myself. Of course, today's show is As One Man Sees It. So let's get into the mission of the NAAEA before we get started today. That mission is simply to help inspire a beautiful community of people, motivate them to ensure that they understand how to meet their needs. And these needs need to be met. And how will they be met? They will be met through the peace concept or the peace process. Here's what we need. It's really simple, people. It is politics, a political agenda, an economic agenda, cultural. You have to have an athletic agenda, right, that really speaks to creating a culture of health and wellness. It goes together. I'm working this thing today. Your culture has to be the one that guide, lead, and direct the people, right? So our culture now has to have us to focus on our health and wellness. There's nothing wrong with that. So that's athletics, health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition. That's right. That's what we do at the NAAEA. Cultural program, relevant cultural programs, creating culture and mindsets and state of minds and ideas that help our people sustain themselves. Yes, that's it. And then lastly is education. And it's a comprehensive education, right, about who we are, who we're going to be, defining ourselves, naming ourselves, creating ourselves, and speaking for ourselves as we continue on with the principles of Kwanzaa. So it is up to you to continue to do the work of working on yourselves. Today I'm bringing in my good friend, Brother Booker, to the show for the conversation. Brother Booker, how are you?
Good, brother. How are you?
Welcome, welcome, welcome. All right, so today we're going to talk about As One Man Sees It. It's Community Conversation, NAAE style, with Brother Booker. Brother Booker, what you got for me?
Well, I'm going to start off by reading something that I just posted a couple days ago on Facebook, and then we'll take it from there. And as you just said, I titled it As One Black Man Sees It, you know. And it says, for the past couple of years, I have been on a special journey to find the God in me. As I have been on this journey, one thing that has become clear to me, which is for me to be able to find the God in me, one thing I must do is to be honest with myself. Therefore, I must call it like I see it, hence, as one black man sees it. As a black man being honest with myself, I must admit the truths of this world or country in which I live. They are: as black men living in America, we are totally dependent on a white man for everything that we need to not only exist, but to also have any kind of future. We need the white man to give us an education. We need the white man to give us a job. We need the white man to get a house or a place to live. We need the white man to teach us his language. We need the white man to teach us about God and his son Jesus. We need the white man to teach us about heaven and hell. We need the white man to teach us how to love and how to make love to our women. We need the white man to teach us about money. What is it in his economy? We need the white man to teach us about everything. In other words, we need the white man to teach us about life. If I'm being honest with myself, I must admit that the white man is my God. You see, everything we have been taught about God and who he is, again, if we are honest with ourselves, that's the white man. That is the white man. Because God did not educate me. The white man did. God did not give me a job. The white man did. God did not give me a place to live. The white man did. I do not speak God's language. I speak the white man's language. In fact, God did not teach me about the white man. The white man taught me about God. God did not teach me about heaven and hell. The white man did. So yet again, if I'm honest with myself, I must admit that the white man to me is God. Or in the words of a slave, the white man is my master. Now remember, I started by saying, as one black man sees it. Let me say here that I hope I'm wrong. However, being honest with myself, this is how I sees it. Understand that if we want to find a God in us, we must be honest with ourselves. I no longer believe that I must die before I can see God. Being honest with myself, I must question everything I think I know. Look, help me out here. Am I missing something? Have we not been educated by the white man? Do we not work for him? Does he not provide us with a place to live? Do we not speak his language? Did he not teach us about God and his son Jesus? Did he not teach us about heaven and hell? Is this not his economic system in which we live? And is this not his democracy in which we live? And isn't his constitution we are to be loyal to? Isn't his constitution we are to be loyal to? A constitution whose foundation was built on superiority or white supremacy. Do I believe the white man is God or the creator of all things? Of course not. However, again, being honest with myself, I must admit that he has total control of my life. That is why I'm searching for the God in me. Fortunately, his system is crumbling before our very eyes, and it is not because of us or anything we are doing or did. It's because of him, the white man. You see, his system, democracy or republic, whose foundation was built on superiority or white supremacy, needs a bottom or an inferior group for it to work. That is where we, the slaves, come in. The true foundation of the system, that's us. You see, the slaves must believe in the superiority of the system / master or God. The problem with the system is not all white people can be superior. In the beginning, all white people can appear to be superior, but as the system attempts to spread over the world, it has to take on an illusion of inclusion of all, therefore creating a separation among white people. Now, those white folks who masterminded or created the system, they now ascend to the top and become true masters of the system. Now, those white folks who did the hard labor of breaking the black man over 300 years and making him a slave or nigger, most became what is called the middle class. The middle class was then divided into three groups: upper middle class, middle class, and lower middle class. And these three groups that have become the founders of the white supremacy movement. The white lower middle class group in America and around the world really feel like they are being kicked to the curb and are being treated like niggers by their wealthy brothers and sisters. And out of their pure hatred of the black man, they will destroy the entire system before they let their brothers treat them like a nigger. You see, it is the white man's hatred and the evil nature that continues to destroy his systems, which are built on a foundation of superiority. Once again, let me say here that this is how I'm seeing things, or as one black man sees it. I really do hope I'm wrong and that all of you who don't see it the way I do are right. But if I'm right, we are not ready or prepared for what is about to happen in this world in which we live. As one black man sees it, searching for the God in me. And that's what I've posted, brother. That's
all
how
right.
I sees it.
All right, you know? That's a heavy, heavy piece there, brother. That's a heavy piece.
Well, it's how I sees it. You know, and we said, and you got to be, we've got to be honest with ourselves. I got to start
okay.
with me. I got to be honest. I cannot see this world in which I'm living in and acquire knowledge and the wisdom and understanding of it, and then act like I don't see it, and don't call it like it is. You know, we've been totally, you know, they say on the street, hoodwinked and bamboozled.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as we were saying earlier, as you say, conned by the master con artists. You know, I mean, again, being honest with ourselves, as I related back to the streets, you know, back to the projects that I grew up in Gilpin Court, what we are on the street, we would say, we just man bitches.
Mm.
You know? He pimping us, been pimping us for years, steadily pimping us. We his hoes.
Mm.
But they don't call us hoes.
Hmm.
They call us niggas.
Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, brother.
Mm-hmm.
You started mm-hmm. out by saying that the one thing that you had to do was to be honest with yourself. What was that process
yep.
like, and how did you get to the honesty?
When I started realizing, I said, you know, everything I know about God, I've been taught by somebody else. Now, God, as we are taught, is supposed to be our daddy. God is my father. So it was like everything I know about my father, someone else has told me. You know, everything. And folk would ask me, do I not believe in God? You know, when we have conversations and I put my philosophy out there and how I see things, et cetera. You don't believe in God? No. Yeah, I believe in God, the creator. But what you're asking me to believe in is you, the person who's telling me about God. Because I've never had a conversation, unfortunately, with my father, God. I've never had a conversation with God.
Okay.
All my conversations have been with you so-called mediators, or interpreters who are trying to teach me about God. So you're not asking me to believe in God. You're asking me to believe in you. And so now I realized in my studies, because I studied the Old Testament in college. I studied New Testament in college. I studied the Quran. I studied Islam in college, and you know, et cetera. And then when studying these things in school, you know, for example, in the Old Testament, in my Old Testament class, I was studying the Old Testament. We started off in Genesis, you know, and the professor laid it out. And it's not me, this is the white professor, you know, laying it out. It's like, on the first day, God said, let there be light, as it said in the Bible. Let there be light, and it was. And he used the greater light for the day, lesser light for the night, and so forth. And so was the end of the first day, and God was pleased. So then we go to day four, and he says, God created the sun, the moon, and the stars, placed the sun in the heavens and so forth. And then he asked the question, kind of like, well, wait a minute, let me ask y'all something. Y'all following me, right? Yeah, we're following you. He said, well, if you're following me, and God did not make the sun, the moon, and the stars until day four, what light was that he made on day one when he said, let there be light? And everybody went, hadn't thought about that. Say, yeah, but it says right here in the Bible that on day one he said, let there be light. But then day four, he didn't create the sun, the moon, and the stars until day four. So I got to being, you know, like in college and analytical and so forth. I'm putting a critical eye on this thing. I'm trying to just, okay, I got to be honest with this thing. I just can't accept it because somebody said. I've got to look into it. I got to dig into it. And I really got into the Bible the way I never had before. I got into the Old Testament, New Testament, and the Quran. And more recently, I got to the point, you know, I said, well, I came to the conclusion. I got to find God in me. You know, if I'm a child of God, and as Jesus said, when you see me, you see my Father, because I am one with my Father. And I said, well, I'm one with my Father. Then if my Father is in me, so then why look outside of me for my Father when he is in me? And I got to find him in me.
Let me ask you this, and brother. Doing before that, we even go even, before we go deeper, right, I know somebody's listening, right? And I want you to tell the listener where you're coming from, right? Because some of our people are not used to thinking like this, right? So where is his brother coming from is what they're saying. Why he telling us the white man is our daddy and everything that we do, white people told us. What is the purpose of how you see it? What would you be trying to tell this listener that's listening right now to this? What do you want to say to them about the information that you're sharing?
You got to be real with yourself. That's what being honest with yourself is. You know, we can't, when we know something is the truth and is right, we can't deny it. And that's how you have to look at it. And in my studying, and I'll say to them, study the Bible. Study what it's saying, you know. Is there truth in the Bible? Yeah, there's some truth in the Bible. But the Bible been made, it's hidden truth. And you've got to really study it and ask yourself, let me go a little further back if I can. Growing up, I was in San Diego. I was a Star Trek fan. Loved Star Trek. I used to run home from work every day so I could get in front of the TV by 4 o'clock to watch Star Trek when it came on. And my favorite character on Star Trek, my main man, was Dr. Spock. And Dr. Spock got me thinking, you got to look at things logically. If it's not logical, if it's not real, then it doesn't make sense. You got to look logically, you know, at things. So if I'm studying, if you're going to teach me on one hand that I'm a child of God and God is my daddy, then logically I got to think that his greatness is in me.
Right.
Because what God going to create children but not give them his children his greatness? You know? That's why Jesus said, I'm one with God. He's in me. I don't do my will. I do the will of my Father. I'm one with my Father. When you see me, you see my daddy. When you listening to me, you listening to my daddy. When you see me walk, you looking at my daddy walk. I'm one with him, you know, because his greatness is in me. And that's where I think personally we fall short. We're taught supposedly we can be anything we want to be if we put our minds to it, which is a lie in this country and in the world we live in. But let's look at that. I can be, and you can be anything you want to be if you put your mind to it, except God. You better not tell anybody you God or you can be God. Oh, no, you can't be God. What? But yet God's my daddy, and I'm created in his image and his likeness, but I can't be like him? But you're telling me I can be anything else I want to be if I put my mind to it? Well, what if I really put my mind to it? Why can't I be God? My creator, my Father, who gave me this mind, who gave me this greatness, and said I'm in his image and in his likeness, just like my dad. Why can't I be? You know, so I started looking at things. I'm being analytical. I'm being logical. I'm thinking, yeah, that makes sense to me. You know, I'm one with my Father, so yeah, I can be God. Now, why the other thing when I stopped teaching students that you can be anything you want to be in the society if you put your mind to it, because it's a lie. There's only one president, so everybody can't be president.
Right.
And that president only elected once every 4 years. So a black man, if you're lucky, every 4 years, if you see 15 of them, you live to be 60. Well, you live to be 60, and then you can't be one until you're 35. You know, so you can't. And then law school, when they start getting too many lawyers, they increase the scores and the requirements and so forth, so everybody can't get in to be a lawyer. Same thing with doctors. You know, when they get enough doctors, they start cutting back, so you can't get into medical school. You know, it's not finite as you would, if you would.
Wait, brother. So are you saying that, then what would you tell the kids to aspire to be then?
Aspire to be the greatness that's in you. And don't, you know, be all that, be everything you meant to be as a person, and you might exceed expectations of this society. See, you people don't already created these jobs and these illusions of opportunities for you to get that you can't, because everybody can't be a basketball player. I tell you, okay, you won't be a superstar basketball player, but you got to have another plan. Because how many basketball players are there? What, 30 teams? And you got 15 players on each team, I think, now. So what's that, 300? Let me see, 10, that 300, another 5, 450 players. And they're bringing in basketball players from all over the world. You got 450 Negroes in Gilpin Court that want to play basketball. and think they can play basketball and think they can make it.
Brother, let's dig a little bit deeper into this thing now. Because I want to break this thing down as much as we can, because this is how one man see it. And you say, as a black man living in America, we are totally dependent on the white man for everything. That we need not only to exist, but to also have any kind of future. And then you said we need the white man to give us education, a job, a house, or a place to live. His language taught us about God and Jesus and heaven and hell, along with how to love and how to make love to our women.
Mm-hmm.
To teach us about money and his economy, we need the white man to teach us everything, in other words. We need the white man to teach us about life. All right, let's break that down a little bit. Education, a job, a house, place to live, and the language. What are your views on that?
Well, they all not really mutually
exclusive. How do you come to that conclusion?
Well, we go to his schools. But number one, we speak his language. So first, he got to teach us his language, you know.
True.
He got to teach us what English is. He got to teach us what education is, what schools are. He got to teach us what the meaning of God is, what Jesus is, you know, all those things. He teaches us what the Bible is, because we're speaking his language. Without his language, we're not connected with our language anymore. We're connected to reality through his language. There was a white philosopher called Richard McKeon. And Richard McKeon wrote a book where he talked about the fundamental ways of viewing reality. And one of his ways of what called the phenomenological viewpoint. And in his phenomenological viewpoint, he says, if I control your language, I control your reality. Okay? So a house becomes a house because I'm defining it for you what a house is. I tell you, I mentioned to the slaves a house. A slave don't know what a house is. I got to tell him and show him, well, this house, it looks like this. This house looks like that. This is a floor. This is a wall. This is a door. This is a window. This is a screen. All those things have to be defined. And we as black folk, really, most of us don't truly understand the meaning of most of the words we speak. You know? That was one point I had to make. I tried to make to the students at Armstrong. And I'm not being vulgar here, like I've said before, but you know how the children at Armstrong, how they roll. I hear them and motherfucker. And I said, brother, what's a motherfucker? Define that term for me. You know, and they like, Mr. Chambers, I said, no, but you said it, motherfucker. You know, what does it mean? someone fucking your mama? What are you talking about here when you use that language? And then it can have can be a term of endearment. You know, he can be a bad motherfucker, good motherfucker, funky motherfucker. You know, we put meanings, all these terms, it's his language. So there, right there, he controls that reality through his. We don't know if what we be able to see each other with that's in our head are called eyes. That's what the white man tell us. Those are your eyes, his language. And then he defined those allow you to see and get vision and so forth and all that. You see with your eyes. I looked up the word see in the dictionary one time years ago. To my surprise, the word see, S-E-E, was defined as to acquire knowledge of, to understand, S-E-E, to see. And then the example we used was, you know how you can't figure out something and it be driving you crazy and you're like, oh man, I just can't do it. And then it pops into your head and what do you say? Oh, now I see it. To acquire knowledge of, to understand. So right there, controlling our language, I mean, he controls our reality because we speak the king's language. So therefore, he defines for us what a job is. This is a job. When y'all down in the field picking cotton for me, that's a job. You got to work. They will tell me what work is. In a cotton field, you got to win, you got to bend, you got to pick the cotton. That's working. Boy, that's working, nigga. You know, you got to do that. You know, you got to do those things. He's defining all these things to me. You know, and if you want to get a better job, then you need better education. Well, what's education? Well, we got the school building over here. And we call it elementary school, middle school, high school, college. If you're lucky and go to college and get a bachelor's degree, and Lord help you, you can get a master's degree. What's a master's degree? I'm going to tell you a little bit. Then, and if you get a PhD, and a PhD, really all that means is PhD is mean you can teach everybody else. You know, once you got your PhD, then you become a philosopher, a professor. You become respected, renowned. But as one brother said to me one day, you know what they call a black man with a master's degree? I said, no, what? He said, nigga. It's the same thing. You know? You know, so therefore, I'm controlling your language. I'm controlling your education. I'm controlling your job, where you live. Because the more money you make, the better house you can get, where you can buy one. Or you're going to have an apartment, but you still got to be connected to me. You still got to have that money. Oh, yeah, and this is money right here, this little piece of paper right here. Like OJ's said, for a small piece of paper, it carries a lot of weight. That mean, old green, you know. And I'm going to give you this paper. It used to be backed by gold, silver. Now it's backed by nothing but the government's word, and we know he ain't got no damn word. He don't tell no truth. But that's it. You got to get that money. You got to work. You got to do these things to get this money, to do all these things controlled by him. You know, he tell you basically what time to go to bed, what time to get up, what time to be to work, what time to go to lunch, what time to get off, you know, and he plan your whole damn day for you. Okay, if you want to come by happy hour when you get off work, drive by this joint. We got joints all over town. We can come by happy hour and have you a drink, have you a beer. The price is a little cheaper from this period right here to the... But, you know, they say every day, there's a little saying, New Year's. They say the way you start a year off is the way you end up. You ever heard that saying?
Yeah.
And most of us, how do we start New Year's off? Drunk.
Half high.
Half high. And hopefully making love to a woman. All right? And then you go, okay, you get into New Year's Day. That's New Year's. We've got some college football for you to watch and continue getting drunk because of the holiday. Keep drinking, keep getting high. Then we got Martin Luther King Day coming up, so you have another day off. You can go celebrate that. Then you got the President's Day. Then yesterday we had Groundhog's Day. Then you got Valentine's Day. So now you got to go spend some money, get your woman, get her buy some gifts, and keep the economy going and spend your money and do some more stuff on Valentine's Day and do that. Then you got, what's the next holiday, Easter. Easter Friday, Easter Sunday, and you go. Everybody go out and buy new clothes and go to church and thank God again, because I've been hell. The church is packed on Easter Sunday. People you ain't even seen since last Easter Sunday, you know. Then you get into May and you got, what is it, Memorial Day. Then you got the 4th of July, another day when you cook out because, you know, get drunk again, come around, and then August or summer, everybody going to the beaches. Well, I forgot spring break in April. College is let out, and everybody go out and get buck wild again, you know. And then June, you get summer vacation out of school. Everybody go to the beaches, and, you know, traveling all around the country if you can afford it, go around the world and come back Labor Day weekend, you know, Veterans Day in November, you know, Halloween, trick-or-treat, you spend more money than Turkey Day, which I call Suckers Day. Then you got Christmas, you go party again. Then you got New Year's, and then we start all over again. And right. The same thing over and over until you die.
Well, let me ask you this.
Total confusion.
Let me ask you this. So I'm going to put it this way. This is an establishment now, and all these things you listed speaks to the experience of our people who have been enslaved here that are now a part of the system. What are you telling them this for, and what do they need to know about how to do something? What would you say to do about the knowledge that you've come into now of how you see it?
Well, the first part of your question, that was a song about that too. What we need to do, how did Teddy put it? Wake up everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more backwards thinking, time for thinking ahead. You know, we got to wake up. You know, and it goes back to being honest with yourself. You got to see these things and acknowledge them and recognize. We got to stand up as a people and say we've been damn fools. We're out of our minds. We've been played. Now, once you accept that as reality and you understand it, then you got to say, okay, I ain't saying dwell on it and be angry. Now we got to say, what the hell are we going to do about it? How are we going to change this situation? And my humble opinion, brother, and we need a revolution. And that revolution has to start with each and every one of us. We need a revolution of the mind. You know, we need the revolution of the mind. We need to kick the hell out of us, kick the devil out of us. Again, I'm going back to we got to be honest with ourselves. First, we got to admit that we know we're wrong and we've been wronged and we've been used and abused, you know, bamboozled and hoodwinked. So come up out of there. We need to just turn our minds totally around. Elijah Muhammad said we need to have our brains taken out of our heads and washed thoroughly and put back in. Now the brainwashing, the woolly lynch that's been done to us. You know, that's why I'm saying find the God in you. We've got to find the God in each one of us.
I heard that, and that is really a great spiritual piece, I would say. But now you said a very key critical word here, right? And I think that word is really scary for some people. So, and I know you said that we have to wash our minds, but the revolution word, the R word,
okay,
right? Because that's
okay,
really scary,
okay,
for, you know, coming off of this storming of the Capitol. You know, I want you to be clear about what it is that you're saying, because I think some of our people could be really afraid and really fearful of that word that you're talking about and the context in which you mean it. So can you break that down a little bit about washing the minds and the revolution of the mind?
We've got to begin by questioning everything we think we know. And I would say, even if you want again look at a piece in the Bible and say, people, when they talk about the Bible and Christianity, so they're talking about faith, having faith. But the Bible also says, prove all things. Prove all things. We just cannot continue to go along and take their word verbatim as the honesty, God, truth, if we can't prove it. We've got to reevaluate where we are as people, as individuals, proving all things. Get wisdom, get knowledge, but above all, as the book said, get an understanding. We've got to we got to get the crap out of our minds and our way of thinking. That's what I'm saying a revolution is. Now, having said that, if we do that and be successful at that, the system in which we live not going to want us like that. You follow what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
If we get rid of the Willie Lynch mentality, if we get rid of the nigger in us per se, the system will really want us gone, because they will know we're no longer under their control. We're free thinking men and women.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me say right here, by nature, black people are kind, loving,
mm-hmm.
caring, righteous people. That's our nature, okay? So when I say revolution, I'm not talking about being physical necessarily. I want to go burn stuff down and start a war. No, I'm saying prepare ourselves for righteousness. But on the flip side of that now, in the process of us preparing ourselves for righteousness and to be the men and women that God created us to be, our daddy made us to be, to reflect the God in us, well, when our enemies come after us because they don't want to see us like that, I'm not saying turn the other cheek neither.
Okay. That makes sense.
You know, but
nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, but nothing wrong with that. We're very peaceful people, kind-hearted, loving people. But if you can't imagine this, and I know it's going to be difficult for us to imagine this, but let's just say we all truly came together in peace as one, and we all find the God in us.
Mm-hmm.
I would dare say, brother, at that time, it wouldn't be nothing anybody in the world could do to us as a people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no nuclear weapons, no bullets, no. If we all were truly together as a people, one mind, one God, and the God in us. Because like I said, if I find the God in me and you find the God in you, we will find each other.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got all the black people in the world finding their daddy in them, it's that in itself would be untouchable. The power of the mind, we don't even know. And black folks, and I'll say Negroes, have done some great things in this country and in this world to benefit the country. Creating first this, first that, all that, you know, all, you know, because our masters, our slave masters, have taken control of our minds and got our minds working for him and making things to make his system, his world better. But we don't understand the capabilities that we truly have. You know,
right.
Let's say if God is our daddy, you know, our father, that's the universe, man. That's not just earth. That's all. And like, how do we even know this earth? But that's another conversation, because the white man taught us that it's called earth. But that's earth, Mars, Jupiter, you know, Saturn, you know, Pluto, the sun, the moon, the stars, the gravitational pull, the water, the air. That's all that. That's what our daddy did. That's what we are capable of, you know. That's why when we talk Black History Month, I said, how can we talk Black History Month and don't start with God? That's to be the first name first thing out of our mouths when we say let's celebrate Black History Month. First thing we should talk about, first person we should talk about is God. That's where it starts. But Black History Month, who do we celebrate? Slaves. Former slaves, so-called great slaves. We don't go past the plantation. We don't know nothing about past the plantation. We're going to talk about Marcus Garvey. We're going to talk about Harriet Tubman. We're going to talk about Dr. King. We're going to talk about Denmark Vesey. We're going to talk about Nat Turner. We're going to talk about, you know, former slaves. and or descendants of slaves. You know, that's our black history from the plantation to now, to where we are now. We existed long before the white man plantation, but we don't know it. That's that total control of us. You know, we had to be prepped to leave the plantation. Remember, brother, when we first on the plantation, brothers and sisters were fighting and kicking and screaming and killing and trying, you know, they were trying to kill the white man, their masters. You know, Denmark Visa, Nat Turner, and brothers like that. They were, no.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we ain't tolerating this. We don't want to be up in this thing. We come around, we going to kill y'all for what y'all doing to us. You know, that's how they were. So after 100 years of shackled, had to be shackled at night, shackled in the field, people standing over there watching with a whip, keeping you. I mean, you know, breaking you. And then when you have children, they take the children, separate them from the parents, and then start raising them from the womb, putting fear in them. You know, the woolly lynch thing, putting fear, growing and growing, until they got us to the point where you could take the chains off and let the niggas run free and work free, because now we got control of the minds. Then you keep that going for another 200 years. Still taking the children and trying to selling them off, doing whatever, and making you a nigger, making you a man to do what you want to do, making you a slave. And then in 1863, after a couple hundred, almost 300 years of doing this crap, we said, you're free. You can go now. And what did niggers do? Master, where we going? I can't go nowhere, boss. Master, where we go? We can. And Master said, well, you know, we country got a new rule now, a new law. I can't keep y'all as slaves. You free, so go on. But Master, we don't want to go nowhere. Well, Master, can we stay here and do the work that we've been doing? And you just let us live in the shacks we've been living in and became sharecroppers. And those sharecroppers have been. Now, if we had been free of the mind, truly free on January the 1, 1863, truly, and I've said this before, if we'd been truly free, we'd have got the hell out of here. We'd have built our own ships and said, we're going back. We want to stay. After what you done been through over 300 years, and you'll stay and integrate in this? Are you kidding me? No, not no free black man. Niggas will, though. Slaves will, because they know nothing else at this point. Totally dependent on the system. Now we're competing against each other for the white man's table scraps. Who can get the best job? What nigga can get this? What nigga can get this? Light-skinned niggas get this. They get that better. And I guarantee all those so-called niggas that became the first one, they descendants of house niggas. Not the field hands. Look at the movies. Look at the movies today. I mean, it started back in the 50s and 60s when they had the TVs. You know, very rarely you saw a real dark brother on TV. Well, you saw a few back then when they first came in. But over the years after that, the lighter. You know, we want light-skinned Negroes. Mm. Look at them now. You'd be hard-pressed to find a dark-skinned brother on television or popular in the movies. Now we said nigga too black, man. We had a brother growing up we're so black we call him blue. And who all the brothers wanted in the neighborhood? The high yellow gal. High yellow gal, everybody was on her, boy. Cause she looked like a white woman. You know, that's total control, brother. Total control. We had two movements going on back in the day, too. I ain't going to say a violent movement. We had the by any means necessary movement, which was not a violent movement. Malcolm just was stressing by any means necessary. We are very peaceful people. But I'd be damned if I won't let you sick dogs on my women and children. You sick a dog on my woman, boy, I'm coming after you and your damn dog. That was what Malcolm was. The white folks were pushing Dr. King. Another thing in class, in VCU. I took a class in black religion. Okay? In this black religion study class, we found out, they taught us that in the 30s and the 40s, black people were leaving the churches in droves. Didn't believe it. Didn't want to be in it. And they called the preachers handkerchief head niggas. Okay? And they said white folks needed a man. They needed someone who could, because the field niggas, as they said, they were really radical uprising and was didn't have enough. This was a movement in America, 30s and the 40s,
mm-hmm.
50s, coming up strong. They done had enough of this, and they said white folks said they needed to find someone who could not only communicate with the house niggas, but could
mm-hmm.
communicate with the field niggas. And they found him up in Boston. He went to, I think, Boston University with Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
Said Martin Luther King, the one that white folks wanted to peddle with nonviolence to keep black folks from out of that. We can overcome this with a nonviolent, peaceful movement. And all. So they pushed Martin instead of Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm.
Okay.
You know, and they used Martin. Okay? Truth be told, they used Martin. Martin started pushing integration. Going, you know, that's what we all in this together, nonviolent. I ain't going to fight you back and all that, you know, and put him out there. And black folks through the church and everything went and became a civil rights movement, a nonviolent movement, integration movement for things. And which really, and Martin said it towards the end, he made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why they took him out, because he started to change. He met with Elijah Muhammad, not just Malcolm. He met with Elijah Muhammad. And he said he's starting to see things differently. And they said, white folks said, we cannot let these two Negroes from Georgia get together. Because Martin had the masses of the black folk. And then Elijah had Malcolm and had the more radical set of black folks that weren't going to take no crap. So they had to split that. And that's why they killed Martin instead of Elijah. Because if they had killed Elijah, it would have been all hell to pay. You know? But he killed Martin. That's why the night before he was killed, he said, I have a dream that one day, and he talked about, I've been to the mountaintop, and I've
mm-hmm.
seen the promised land. You know, he said, we as a people going to get there. I might not get there with you, because he knew his life was short. But we as a people will get there. Only thing I wish he had done was not spoken parables that night and said it.
Mm.
I'd have seen a world would look like when we black folks come together and do the things we're supposed to do. I'd have been to that mountaintop, and we as a people, black folk, we going to get there. I might not see it because these white folk going to kill me. You know, just, you know, because when you speak in parables, like some of the Bible, the parables, and people don't, you know, can't read through the lines, it can lead you astray.
Mm-hmm.
Or people can interpret it differently to make it out to saying something you really weren't saying. You know?
True.
You know? So now they try to make Martin out, black folk trying to make Martin out to be where he wasn't that. He wasn't weak. He wasn't that. He really was. No, towards the end, he changed. He did change. And I'm one that followed Martin.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I ended up following Elijah. But I started with Martin. I remember running Muslim brothers out of the neighborhood. Because I talk to Islam stuff, man, y'all need to get up out of here, man. You're talking that crap of the white man and devil doing it. And they were talking about they're so Russian. And one brother was talking about the Russians and how they're doing it. I said, man, we got Russia all tied up. Alaska got them bordered, you know, and all that. Russia ain't gonna do nothing with us. We done, you know, and I was God bless America, the American flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands. One nation under God, indivisible. Loved it. You know, that was me, brother. But until I started opening my mind and started researching and analyzing and doing things, you know, studying and admitting back then, I got to be honest with myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's move to a couple more questions real quick. You talked about the crumbling system and the illusion mm-hmm. of inclusion. Can you speak to that?
See, you know, the founding of this country was, you know, they killed it. I hate to even call them Native Americans because that's not them, or they damn sure not Indians, because
mm-hmm.
Columbus thought he was in India, so that's how they became Indians. But the original people of the planet. We're black folks. I mean, the Native Americans, so-called Indians, were people of color. Okay? As well.
All right.
So when they set up this democracy with the Constitution, and as you said so eloquently earlier today, the Constitution, you know, they were talking about we the people. You know, we the people, and we all equal. And all, although in the original Constitution, they said, except black folk, we were 1/16th human. That's why we could be slaves and tortured in the way they were treating us, because we weren't human. We were 1/16th human. But as the nation and that bullshit started to grow, other people around the world that they wanted to spread this thing to all over the world, they wanted them to buy into the doctrine, so they had to start looking like or reflecting that they were who they said they were. The illusion of inclusion. So we can let, you know, we freed the slaves. We've now integrated them into the society. We don't have these pictures on TV no more about the dogs and the buses and we're whooping them and all. Now, we really are good white folks. This is America, the Constitution. God bless us all. And they start letting the Hispanics and Mexicans come in and all, you know, bringing it in. And at one point, we too, black folk, back in the 60s and 70s, we were making more money on welfare than out on the job, working at hard labor. So black folk took that attitude. I ain't going to work. I can do this, goddamn. I ain't working at labor. I can do this and get welfare and make this. And then the Hispanics, it basically started in California and Texas, started saying, well, hell, I'll come over and work for $25 an hour, 25 cents an hour, and work the fields for 50 cents an hour. And that started that. The white laborer, the white farmers in this California and Texas, they started picking the Mexicans up at the border, bringing them over and letting them start working them for 25, 50 cents an hour in the fields and all that. So that started this influx. Then others from all over the world started coming, and then there's this illusion, but everybody can come. Like the Statue of Liberty says, send us your wretched or whatever it is. Oh, everybody can come. You know, that's this country. But in the process, after a while, over some years of that, then too many. We got more niggas up in here. Too many niggas. We got these Hispanic niggas, and then they speaking Spanish and all that. And they got, they speaking, and then the Filipinos, they started letting Filipinos in the Navy and everything. And white folks, the guy was on the ship with Filipinos back in the 70s, and white folks would get pissed with the Filipinos speaking Tagalog, their language. And one white boy asked me one day, but doesn't that bother you? I said, what? He said, they over there talking that Tagalog shit. I said, no, it doesn't bother me. He said, what are they talking about you? I said, I don't care if he ain't man enough to say it in a way I can understand what he's saying. If he's trying to piss me off, I ain't got no problem with him. You know, he can speak his language. I wish I knew my language so I can speak mine. You know, but they cut that out. All that. So in that process, your lower class white folks, they sliding down the bottom further and further to where they now losing jobs to these niggas. You know, and so that's when, you know, the uprising became again in the Klan, because we had Klan in the military back in the 60s and 70s. Ain't nothing new about that. You know, I mean, deep in the military. That whole white supremacist thing, all up in the military, police force. Klansmen joined the police force so they could beat niggas. You know, I mean, that's what that was. So you got all that going on, and now they looking up and seeing, because, you know, they still trying to get that illusion of inclusion, and we all integrated, and we all well. It's costing your lower class white folks, who are just as, I mean, they just so full of hate, like I said, that they will bring this country down before they be treated like a nigga. If I can't have it, none of y'all will have. They're beginning to realize that a little bit. They've been hoodwinked and bamboozled. You're now peddling me as your niggas. No, we ain't gonna have that. Hence your white supremacist. Your white supremacy, your white power movements. We're not taking it. Hell to the no. That's why they've been training with these guns and so forth in the mountains and the woods for years, man. 20, 30 years it's been going on. So they armed and ready. Because they saw it coming. You know, long time ago. They saw it coming. So it's going to be another revolt. Well, January the 6th gave you a taste of it.
Okay.
They went and marched on the Capitol, broke windows, chairs, threaten congressmen to be the vice president, anybody that turn on us. They won't. They turn it all down. Ain't nothing happened to them. And they talking about you can't impeach Trump. So what? If you can't impeach Trump, boy from Utah, I keep forgetting his name, Senator Romney. He said, if this ain't impeachable, what is?
Let me get to this last question, because you're right on it,
okay.
Right? And this is what you said at the end of your piece. I really do hope I'm wrong, and that all of you who don't see it my way, the way I do, are right. But if I'm right, we are not ready or prepared. I'm going to say that again. We're not ready or prepared for what is about to happen in this world in which we live. And in the last few minutes, can you sum that up? What are you talking about? What we need to be ready for?
Well, you know, a lot of people in my circles and other folk out here, they all saying, and hey, I'm talking about our middle class black folk and everything. They kind of, we sitting back like kind of smiling like this is an in-house war. It ain't affecting me. They can see it. They see that white folk getting ready to fight white folk, you know, to which I say, well, yeah, but we the prize, you know, to whoever win, you know, this thing. We the prize. And it, they got, you know, they got this, the white supremacist or white power or whatever you want to call it, white folk, is in the military, is in the police forces throughout the country. It's in everything. It's every
mm-hmm.
job that you go to, you got them up in there. Every church you go to, you got them up in there. I mean, remember, Trump's biggest supporters were the evangelicals, you know. So this is now waiting, and what they're waiting for, I don't particularly know. I won't say I know, but they all headed. Remember the Civil War now? They headed back in that direction again. If I can't have it, I'll be goddamn if you're going to have it. We'll burn this sucker down first. That's what's about ready to happen, and we're not ready at all because we're not united as a people, and we have not been preparing for this. We've been hoping all these years and keeping hope alive that things will get better and better and better and better over the years. That one day, little white boys and little black girls and little black boys and little white girls going to be holding hands and making babies and loving each other. Just one day, and we'll all come together as one. And one day, through integration, there really won't be no more white people, because if we truly integrate, everybody going to become people of color. And they saying by 2040, that's going to be the case. The 2050, white folk going to be the minority. We think that's going to happen. Don't you think white folks ain't going to never let that happen in this country? They will blow it up first. And we're not ready for it.
We got about 30 seconds left. Sum it up for me, and then we're going to get up out of here. What do you want to leave the listeners with?
I know it sounds difficult. I know it sounds impossible. That's my impossible dream. We must come together as a people. But it all starts with you as an individual, as one. And my goal now for me is, in addition to finding that God in me, find the God in me and then find 10 people like myself. And then get them to find 10 people, each one to find 10 people. And let's start this multi-level marketing campaign where we bring back the black race.
Will I be peaceful and calm?
Right.
That's why I am.
That's it.
When I'm late to
thank
my
you, brother.
Rest.
Thank you, sir.
AAA Community Conversations.
You
thank you, brother Booker. Thank you,
as in the world, will be better for this.
Until next time. Peace and blessings. Peace and blessings.
Scorned and covered with scars, still strong with his last ounce of courage.